You're listening to Community Radio KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about a non-profit founded recently by a woman in Boulder. So far, she's raised $1.5 million to buy and ship personal protective equipment from manufacturers in China and get it to hospitals in need here in the US. After that, the 50th anniversary of Earth Day happens next week. The stay-at-home orders means that many of the events that had been planned won't be happening. But there will be a lot of events happening online. We'll hear from some Colorado young environmental leaders who are planning several days of online events next week. On Connections, Kathy Partridge and Jessica Dancinghart and their guests will take a look at how, in the current politically divided environment, communities are galvanising to bring forth the communities that they want for themselves and their children, and they're using principles of restorative practices. At 9:30, we'll begin another morning of music on the Morning Sound Alternative. But first, the latest local headlines. The city of Aurora announced this week that it will furlough 576 of its employees in anticipation of a decreased budget as a result of the pandemic, Lucy Haggard reports.
The Aurora Sentinel reports that most of the employees are seasonal or temporary workers who remain on payroll until April 25th, but the city has yet to set an end date for the furloughs. The city's budget is largely funded through sales taxes, but as a result of stay-at-home orders to limit shoppers and the closure of non-essential businesses, the city anticipates coming up 6% short of its budgetary goals. Aurora is by no means the only city to consider or implement furloughs in response to the pandemic's economic impact. CBS Denver reported that the city of Boulder announced Tuesday that it will furlough 737 employees effective this Sunday. Most of those are also seasonals or temporary workers, though it also includes 175 of the city's standard employees. And last week, the city of Broomfield announced that it will furlough 235 employees beginning on April 21st next week. The city of Denver has yet to announce any furloughs, though Mayor Michael Hancock has said that it remains an option if necessary.
Also in Aurora, it was announced this week that the Arapaho County Fairgrounds will be converted into a temporary clinic for patients impacted by the coronavirus. Emily Grayson has the story.
On Wednesday, it was announced that Arapaho County Fairgrounds will be converted into a temporary clinic for COVID-19 patients. The massive event center on East Quincy Avenue in Far East Aurora will provide non-critical medical care to COVID-19 patients and will open up additional bed space at increasingly crowded local hospitals. The temporary clinic will be open with enough space for 54 people. However, officials say that they may need to accommodate up to 150 patients. The facility will be focused on those with COVID-19 who need non-critical care, specifically patients who are ready to return to their original housing situation but are unable to do so because of their circumstances. The site covers nearly 50,000 feet and costs approximately $15,000 to equip the facility with cots and other equipment. In order to be seen at the facility, you must be recommended by a hospital. They will be taking zero walk-ins. The center is prepared to start housing patients immediately. For KGNU, I'm Emily Grayson.
In today's weather, expect warmer temperatures and sunny skies around the Front Range. Highs in the low 50s today, slightly warmer tomorrow and Sunday, highs getting into the mid 50s. The lack of personal protective equipment has been a major concern for frontline medical staff, and it's prompted one Boulder woman, Ning Musburger Tang, to take action. She established a non-profit to raise funds to buy PPE and ship it from China. So far, she's raised more than $1.5 million.
So I have friends who are nurses or doctors in the hospitals here in Colorado, and I have been hearing from them for a while now that they were going to work without the proper protective equipment, including gowns and masks. So that made me very concerned. They are doing such a wonderful job to keep us safe, but I feel like they should be protecting themselves so they don't get sick when they're doing the job. So that's why I started to look for a face mask for them, and I found some in Colorado. So I started a small fundraiser, and then I was able to to purchase a few thousand masks and then distribute them to a few hospitals here in Colorado. And that's how I got started.
Well, I know that you're able to use your connections in China to help source this, because all of this really goes to the fact that there are many issues leading to the crisis, that we don't have enough personal protective equipment for frontline medical staff. And it's not just the US, it really is around the world. And so it's the supply issue, but also it's the getting it from point A to point B and from manufacturers in China, and this quite complex system of import and export. Give us a sense of the complexity of that and some of the barriers as to why there we are seeing such shortages of the PPE.
The situation is basically crazy. I mean, I can summarize that as crazy, because there is a huge demand now globally for a very limited supply, I would say. But the good news is that because China actually had been through the crisis a little bit earlier than us, so they have ramped up the production in the country. But there are some people, there are some manufacturers in China, and they are able to produce good quality product in large volume, but they have never exported to the U.S., for example. So what we're trying to do is that we're trying to help them to establish a channel, to help them get in the authorizations and whatnot, documents, and have them in place to make sure that that channel will be opened to export the PPE to the U.S. And actually, as we speak, we are actually working with two manufacturers in China right now, and they have not exported to the U.S. before. So with one of them, we are trying to help them to get emergency use authorization with FDA. And then with the other one, we are just getting the first batch of products from them, masks from them, and make sure that we can get that to clear the custom and get them over here.
The fact that you have to navigate this, you know, complex custom system, get the paperwork from China, get the paperwork from the US, you know, give people a sense of how those layers of complexity are maybe adding to the current situation, where you might have manufacturers ready to go, but actually getting it from the factories to the hospitals, that's an issue in and of itself.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. The freight price has been going up. But in the past 2 or 3 days, it got a little bit better because a lot of products actually were stuck in the Chinese custom due to the change of regulations. So the regulations from FDA, also from Chinese government, have been changing along the way as well. So it's a very fluid changing situation, and to try to navigate, you know, a path to get PPE from China to the US is challenging, but it's doable.
Well, you've been able to mobilize things very quickly on this end and have raised a really significant amount of money. Give us a sense of, you know, the history of when you founded this nonprofit and the success that you've had just in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so we actually just started about 2 weeks ago. And when I started there, I thought we need to raise a large amount of funding quickly so that we can procure products in volume, and that will give us the best price that's possible. So I approached a few of my former coworkers at Google, and they were very generous in supporting this project. So we were able to raise $1.5 million of as a match for a public fundraiser we are running right now. We are hoping to raise another $1.5 million from the public, so we have $3 million of capital to work with. And then we will be able to place orders that in a wholesale price at a large quantity and bring it over here as quickly as possible.
Because that's really key as well, that you have to really buy large quantities of this for it to be cost effective and to really get value for money. I mean, this is all part of the import-export business, I suppose. So, you know, if you do match that $1.5 million that you've already raised, what would you get for that $3 million? What would that translate to in terms of equipment that could be then used in hospitals here in the US?
So that will get us the face masks, KN95, N95, and also surgical masks, surgical gowns, non-surgical isolation gowns, protective clothing, and all that things that are really lacking right now or in dire need right now in the hospital here all over the US.
It's one thing then to get the products, you know, from factories and get it here to the US from China. But then what is the plan for distributing it? Because I know then that you've also partnered with some other nonprofits to really identify the areas of greatest need.
That's a very good question. There are a few nonprofits that have already been on the ground and running and collecting data from different hospitals here in the US. So we have access to a list of 3,000 healthcare institutions here in the US with the need for PPE right now. So we are just working with a group of volunteers who are going through the list and sort them out and making sure that we can identify the top, you know, 10, 20, 30 hospitals that we can offer our PPE to.
I know that this came about very quickly because everything is happening, it seems, with the current pandemic very, very quickly. And you've really managed to mobilize things in a way that's, you know, expedited this whole process. But, you know, given that this isn't really going to finish anytime soon, we're talking about having the peak, certainly, of hospitalizations in Colorado, you know, out several weeks at this point. What's your long-term plan for this? Or is there a way to even have any kind of plan outside of the immediacy of the situation that we're in?
So the situation is urgent and we are we're fundraising right now as quickly as possible. And then we also realize that we cannot continue to go back to the public and asking for more money to get PPE. So we created a business model that we will be donating some of the PPE to hospitals who really need them but cannot afford to pay. But we will sell the rest to organizations that can afford to pay at the cost that we acquire them, which means that they'll be able to get access to PPE at a very reasonable price. And at the same time, it will recover some of the donations. And then we could use the revenue to go back to the market and acquire more PPE for more hospitals.
Now, you came to this not having a background in the production or the import of medical equipment, and yet you've been able to mobilize and use your own personal contacts in China and also, I suppose, your business knowledge to be able to get this going. And so there is a lot of that expertise in this local community, not necessarily, as I said, related to medical equipment, but people who are involved in some type of manufacturing in China, who know how to navigate the customs system, who know the various different layers of what all of that entails. And so, you know, what would you say to people who are listening, who could maybe also step into this area of trying to help in some way move things along?
So I got a lot of help along the way because, like you said, I do not have the medical background or knowledge or procurement or distribution or anything like that. But I do get a lot of help. For example, Assist International is a long-term nonprofit that they work globally to solve medical supply issues, and they are our fiscal sponsor right now, and they're also our distribution partner. And also, we got help from Fraxport.org. That's Fraxport is a global freight forwarder. So they are now helping us to clear the customs, and also they provide the freight for us for free. So which is really helpful because they offer not just their the freight forwarding service, they also provide the expertise that we need to navigate this very complicated situation. So for people who are listening into this broadcast, I would really urge you to make use of the, you know, connections you have, like business connections with, say, Chinese manufacturers, Vietnamese, Taiwanese, Hong Kong, or any other manufacturing countries that you have contact with. You know, just use that relationship to see if you can help us and help other people to create the import channel so we can get the equipment here that we need as quickly as possible.
Well, you're also looking for donations. As you said, you have this $1.5 million that you'd like to match. So how can people find out more about the nonprofit, make donations, and maybe contact you if they are willing to help in some way?
So they can go to our website. That's stepupincrisis.org. And on the website, there's a donation link. And they can, you know, if they can contribute, that would be incredible, because we need every dollar that's donated will be going to purchase the PPE for healthcare workers that really need them right now.
Ning Musburger Tang is the founder of the nonprofit Step Up in Crisis. You can find out more at their website, stepupincrisis.org. Next week marks the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, and climate strikes and actions were planned all around the world. But because of the stay-at-home orders, they've now been moved online. There will be virtual climate strikes happening on April 22nd, 23rd and 24th. Here in Colorado, 350 Colorado, they are planning a whole series of events happening next Wednesday, Thursday and Friday. There are several youth environmental leaders at the forefront of the planning, and I spoke with three of them, Liliana Flanagan, Esperanza Soledad Garcia, and Jiva Sinlavan.
In terms of being well-equipped, I think our generation, specifically when it comes to social media and outreach, you know, if the generation before us were to be doing this work, it would be very, very different, just in terms of engagement. I do think that all of us have been trying to navigate this, you know, Zoom, Google Hangouts, online, everything, you know, together. I think in terms of intersectionality between generations, that's pretty unified. I do think that, you know, in terms of outreach, you know, figuring out how to even engage someone in a live stream, because honestly, our generation isn't the one to say, oh, there's something on Facebook Live. I would absolutely love to spend an hour watching it. You know, it's very different culture. So kind of combining all of these things and combining social media outlets, I think we have enough diversity within, you know, social media use to be able to kind of pull something like this together. But I think, you know, as leaders of this movement, we would be doing similar work anyway in terms of outreach. It would just be directing people to an in-person event and then directing people now to a digital event. You know, I think that our generation has this really incredible diversity of the way that we use technology. And so I think us being able to come together and have youth graphic designers and youth performers knowing how to record themselves and things like that, it's been a cool experience. I think it's going to add a lot of value to sort of the energy of our event on Wednesday and on Friday.
I also feel like before COVID and this pandemic happened, we're all in our homes. So much of the time, a lot of the audience and the attention was put onto the frontline performers and put onto the speakers and the poets and the artists, and rightfully so, because they're sharing their art, they're sharing their gift, you know. But I feel like this transition, and I feel like the people who are in the back, you know, pushing us forward, were the ones who are truly leading us, people who do the tech, who do the flyers, who do the outreach, all of those things that involve sharing in a different way, you know. I feel like they're like the heroes now, because they're helping us, you know, that they're lifting us up. They're lifting us up and then helping us do the same thing. But yeah, it's like being a leader is really leading from the back as they're doing, and then stepping up and being coherent when the time comes and having that strength to do that.
Well, what about the idea that the environmental movement as we know it is really a youth-led phenomenon at this point? That certainly it's young people who were out on the streets, who were doing the climate strikes and have been doing this. But, you know, very large portions of our society have really discounted that and discredited it and tried to ignore it. But it's getting harder to ignore because of the sheer volume of voices now that are part of this. Would any of you like to talk a little bit, or could you talk a little bit about why that should be the way we do go forward, that young voices and young people should be the ones to lead this movement?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to say that young people should be the one to, first of all, lead this movement, because in the long term, it's going to be affecting us. I mean, it's going to be affecting our health. And I know that a lot of the folks who own the oil and gas companies, they're the folks who are not from our age group, obviously. They're from a little bit more of the older age group. And so it's important that we are the ones to become the activists, because it's, first of all, it's going to be affecting us our health. And second of all, as someone who wants to become a mother, who dreams to become a mother, like, I don't appreciate the fact that I'm going to be end up finding like air particles like in the womb or anything like that, according to scientific research that has already popped up, right? So I think it's important that the young people who dream to become mothers, who dream to provide a safe future for their children as well, are really the ones to lead this movement. At the same time, I think it's important that the young people write legislation and they take action in their own unique ways, in any way possible, whether that be businesses that really actually contribute positively to climate change, or any kind of goals that they would set behind climate change, making sure that that they're following certain kinds of either like ideas or remedies, just trying to make sure that the climate is in a good position right now. And I think that it's important that young people take the leads in their own ways, and possibly through the ways that I just mentioned.
Well, in terms of what is actually going to be happening during Earth Week and the upcoming strike, let us know exactly what people can expect and how they can engage. And what are some of the major issues that you're really hoping to touch on as part of Earth Week?
Basically, nationally, the original plan was to have Wednesday, the 22nd, Earth Day, be the deep strike day. Thursday focused on divestment and theme Stop the Money Pipeline. And then Friday was going to be the Get Out the Vote Day. So as we describe these two, you'll see, and it'll become pretty clear how we've transitioned them digitally. Wednesday, what we're doing is, instead of, you know, having a big strike event in person, we are hosting a live stream webinar. So our two primetime hours are 10 to 11 a.m. and then 5 to 6 p.m. And basically the point of that day, at least for us here in Colorado, is joy and celebration for all this work that we've done and this movement that we continue to make. Because even, you know, those of us who are organizing or, you know, say starting to organize the same sort of strikes, but the people who are attending them are also sort of doing the same thing. So we are going to have speakers, performers, people doing spoken word, music, all on this live stream. And then on that Wednesday as well, a big part of our celebration is a fashion show. So Esperanza will talk about that.
And something that really resonates with me is one of our speakers, our spiritual leading person, their name is Lady Speech Sankofa. And something that they preach about sometimes is like, during slavery, like one thing that people would do would be like having joy in their lives and like dancing and celebrating and being really grateful for the small things in life and all of the things that nourish them, you know, and doing that. And in doing that, like, they're liberating themselves personally on their own, like, spirit. They're liberating themselves. So I think that's kind of what we wanted to get at. I was like sharing this like God joy among all of us, something that we all kind of share. And we want to invoke that feeling for people like this will be better. And like there's so much more than just this in the world, you know? And so for our cool little fashion show that we're putting together, we're going to be featuring fashion people from all over Colorado and really like different people who have connections and ties to this land. And having them do that, evoking that feeling, that God joy, and we'll be featuring like spring colors, bold colors, bold bags, huge earrings. Like, we're really excited to just like kind of show that in a way that's like through movement, because movement is something that's so important. And even staying inside, movement is something that brings us joy and needs to be like enjoyed, needs to be grateful for, you know? So that's part of that's our fashion piece. And we'll be having some performers. We'll be having DJ Itef, Lady Speech Sankofa. Lily, do you want anybody on?
And then we have some local young people from the Denver area who are sending in live poetry, and then some of them are going to be performing live.
So that is mainstream of Wednesday. And then I will be leading on Friday, which is more of the political side. As a Colorado high school Democrat state officer, I'll be leading Friday with a bunch of other legislators from the state of Colorado, so like state representatives, state senators, and then also some of our U.S. Senate candidates. So this is mainly just having them connecting the young people and any other candidates who are running, as well as legislators. I feel like there's a large gap between the young people and legislators, because we have like this activism side, and I've noticed that with the young people, especially for the climate strike. But whenever it comes to like writing legislation or like certain bills, I feel like we're a little bit away from that kind of category. So Friday is political action day. And for what we're doing Friday, for the first hour, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be connecting both youth and legislators by having candidates and other legislators just speak on their platform for what they're doing for the climate. And then for the second hour, we're going to actually do breakout sessions on Zoom, and have other young people talk about what kind of specific legislation they want to see in action by their state representative or their state senator, and make sure that they get that in either this session or the next session. And then for the third hour, we plan to have a closing that I spoke with Esperanza on having another art piece. And so mainly what this climate strike is really going to be structured as, it's like really focused on it being culturally. I would have to say around Indigenous people, African-American people. And I think that that's the best thing that our young people do for the movement, because we as a young people, we understand what it means to be like another person of color, and how to accept another person of color within our generation. So I think that this is going to be how our climate strike is going to be organized. And I think that it's going to be great with the young people.
Those were the three youth co-leads of the 3 days of action being organized by 350 Colorado in celebration of Earth Week. Esperanza Soledad Garcia, Liliana Flanagan and Jiva Sinhlavan. You can find out about all of the events happening online for Earth Week at earthdaylive2020.org. That's earthdaylive2020.org. You can scroll down and find the events for Colorado. Thanks for listening to The Morning Magazine here at KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran.